would like now to introduce Desiree Mays. She is a storyteller. She speaks all over the world on opera. She's the author of the book Opera Unveiled, which comes out every year to accompany the Santa Fe Opera season. She gives the preview lectures nightly at the Santa Fe Opera. Welcome, Desiree, to the Radio Cafe.
Hello, Mary Charlotte.
So we are talking today about Maometto by Rossini. Let me say it. Gioacchino Antonio Rossini.
Absolutely. Commonly known as Rossini.
Rossini.
For a good reason.
Now, Maometto is not your typical Rossini opera.
No, it isn't. And it's also one that people may be a little apprehensive of. They've never heard of this and they can't pronounce it. What is it all about? Well, first of all, it is Rossini. It's actually vintage Rossini, but it is different in that it is serious Rossini, as much as Rossini can ever be serious, having said that, because you get the same wonderful melodies. Wait till you hear the music. I hope we can play quite a lot of music from this opera. It's absolutely captivating. It's seductive. It's very accessible. But the subject matter is more serious in this one. The director, David Alden, calls it a siege opera, and that's exactly where the opera starts, with a siege of a city, and then the drama that goes on within the story itself. But it has it's moving forward a little, perhaps, in Rossini's style, in that instead of going from the typical aria and then a recitative, a conversational bit, and the ensembles where a number of people sing, I call this a trio opera. There are one more glorious trio follows another from beginning to end. So it doesn't have that sort of, it's not as structured or formally structured as his earlier operas. And thinking about the Barber of Seville, you know, Rosina comes out and sings an aria, somebody else comes out and sings an aria. It's not like that in this. There's more of a flow through. And as I say, with the blending of three voices over and over again, it's quite beautiful. There are choruses, too, which are a high point of this particular piece. So, yes, it's Rossini. He still has the wonderful crescendos that he's known for. I mean, he really ratchets it up in some of these moments where it's building to a climax. There's a marvelous, they call it a Rossini crescendo, where he stirs everything up and then the curtain falls or the piece ends. It's an exciting piece. It'll keep people on the edge of their seats. And the other aspect of this, I suppose, that does raise questions: what is this all about? Who is Maometto II? The II means secondo. It's actually very simple. This man was Mehmet, M-E-H-M-E-T, in history, and we all know him from school because he was the conqueror of Constantinople. Constantinople was the great center of Christian learning, the Holy Roman Empire. And in the 1400s, this man, who was the head of the Ottoman Empire, vanquished and took Constantinople, thus becoming the leader of both the Holy Roman Empire and the Ottoman Empire. It was a position of enormous power at the time. He was reputedly pretty ruthless in war, as they were in those days. We're talking about the 1400s here, but he was also a leader who, for instance, allowed different religions to be practiced in the lands that he conquered. That was unheard of. I mean, the Muslim faith had to be first. He was a Turk, and these are the Muslims and the Christians, but he did allow the Orthodox Christians, the Armenians, to practice and practice their faiths, and the Jews were allowed to practice under their rabbis. So in history, this Mehmed was a phenomenally big, important, and actually wise king. He ruled for a long time, but he did devastate Europe. I mean, he took most of it, burning most of it before him, and typically by sieges. So at the time we come to the opera, which is where history and fiction part company, he is going to take the island of Negroponte. Negroponte is an island off the northeast coast of Greece. There's a very narrow strait between the island and the mainland, and apparently he actually built a major bridge,
which means ponte.
Ponte, black ponte, yeah, Negroponte, over the straits, which was a pretty amazing feat of engineering at the time, as he was on his way to take the rest of Europe. He didn't take all of Europe, but he took a sizable amount of it. So that's where the setting is, and so we are in Negroponte. Now, Negroponte at the time, this Greek island, was actually under the control of the Venetians, and the man in charge was a general called General Erizo, who is a leading character in the opera. So should we get to the story of this wonderful piece?
Yes, let's tell the story.
Okay, great. It starts with Ariosto confronting his generals. The city has been under siege for 2 months. It's about to fall. And Mahometo is waiting at the gates, promising fire, hellfire, and damnation if they do not surrender the city the following day. So he asks his generals, what should they do? He's seeking advice, and one says, well, rather than lose all of the people, where the innocent people will die, maybe we should surrender. But then Calbo, who is his right-hand man and the other leading character in the opera, Calbo says, no, we fight to the death. We are Venetians. We do not give in to this terrible man. And he sings this wonderful aria right at the beginning of the opera, and you see it sort of evolves into a rousing military march as the troops rally and decide that they're going to fight to the death. Now, the interesting thing to listen for in this particular excerpt of Calbo's is that Calbo is sung by a woman. This was the convention of the time, and the general here is sung by a mezzo-soprano. Now, I'm often asked, why is this? I mean, why are women singing Pan's roles?
Well, okay, here's my understanding of the logic of the world of opera. Women play men because they don't castrate men anymore.
And the early days, yes, going back to the 1600s, 1700s.
So it used to be that you would castrate a man and he'd sound like a woman, but why would you want a castrated man playing a man's role?
Because the composers wrote for this beautiful sound, and this was an absolutely extraordinary sound that the castrati had that we can't even imagine these days. Because of the castration, physiologically, their rib cages were different. They had better breath control, so they could hold notes forever in a way that even to this day no singer can. And there could be apparently a beauty to those voices that drove people crazy. It was very popular. Technically, it was not allowed. I mean, the Bible says you should not do this, but they turned a sort of blind eye. But the day of the castrati went away, and women began to sing these roles. Orpheus and Eurydice could be sung by two women, a soprano and a mezzo, singing the role of Orpheus. And then as time went on, men got to sing these roles. Tenors were non-events in these days. If there was a tenor around about this time, he would be consigned to the role of an older man. Now today, of course, the tenor is the hero who gets the girl. So that has changed. And in this opera, Ariosto, the general, you would expect to be a baritone or a bass, is actually a tenor.
Now, when did this opera premiere? Like, what are we talking about?
This opera premiered in 1820 in the Teatro San Carlo in Naples.
Okay.
But the time of the siege of Negroponte was 1470. And Mehmed had actually taken Constantinople in 1453. That's the historical point. So we're looking at about 20 years later, where he's on his way to take the rest of Europe. He actually sings about that in his entry aria, which we'll hear. It's magnificent, as he's on his way to vanquish all before him. So this is why Calbo is sung by a mezzo-soprano. There's another reason, too. It was for the balance of the sound of the voices. And we're going to hear a trio, for instance, between a soprano and then supposedly two men. But it's a soprano, a mezzo, and a tenor. So the blending of these voices is quite beautiful, and it would not have the same effect of having a soprano and two tenors, for instance. So it was the composer's choice to do this typically, plus the convention of the day. Now, we still get this in later operas. In Richard Strauss, there's a Pan's role in Arabella, which we will talk about. But first of all, let's start with Calbo, who says in this first aria near the beginning, what are you saying? The sword is the last resort of the courageous. I do not fear danger. Let us fight and fall in fierce struggle, and may the barbarians' ashes and bones in hundreds cover my grave. Thank you. Oh, And that's from the opening of Marmetto, the opera by Rossini. You can hear the rallying here, the call to arms. Before they go off to battle, Father Eriso and Calbo come and meet with Anna, who is Eriso's daughter. And they have come to say farewell to her because they're going off to fight this last fight. And the father suggests that she should get married to Calbo. Calbo loves her because if he falls in war, then she will have a husband. But she's a little distraught, this Anna, right from the beginning of the opera. In fact, she's distraught through much of it. She has a terrible, terrible struggle with conscience throughout the entire piece. It's a marvelous role for a soprano. And she says, well, she can't marry Calbo because she has fallen in love. And she tells the story of how when her father was away in somewhere else, that she was left on her own and she met a young man called Uberto and they fell passionately in love and she cannot marry anybody else. And her father's listening to this and he said, Uberto? He said, but Uberto was with me on my campaign. He cannot have been here. So the man obviously is an imposter. And who is the imposter? Now, at this point, this is all up in the air as to what's going on. And Eriso is furious with his daughter. He thinks that she is betraying him and he's angry with her. Calbo throughout is sympathetic to her. He realizes that she's in a difficult position. So they're in the middle of having this discussion when the cannon is heard and both men go rushing off to fight the battle. And you'll hear, first of all, in this section, you'll hear the cannon when they leave. And then that crescendo I talked about, the Rossini crescendo, which builds and builds and builds. And then the men have gone and she is left. And she sings, what is happening? The din of battle is heard, perhaps a betrayal in the dangers of the night. I must fly to the church to implore heaven's aid, at least to save my father's life. So the recording, I should say here, is actually the most wonderful recording that if people are interested should try and get. The opera shop, I know, has all the recordings of the operas. This one is conducted by Claudio Schimone. It's the Philharmonia Orchestra of London. June Anderson sings Anna, the daughter. Samuel Raimi is at the peak of his career singing Maometto. And Margarita Zimmermann is the mezzo who sings Calbo. But here is the point at which the canon is heard in the crescendo of Rossini. So she flees to the church where, of course, there is a very beautiful prayer. This is a lovely slower section of this opera where Anna prays that they will be safe and somehow be saved from the tyrant Maometto. There's a lovely harp accompaniment here as she prays with the Venetian women in the church. It's beautiful, this, isn't it? The music.
Yeah, I mean, these are. I mean, some of these operas really are just opportunities for a variety of musical.
Gorgeous music. Yeah. The storyline is not really what it's all about. It doesn't always raise the great philosophical issues.
Some of them do.
Some of them do. And actually, in this, I think the issue of honor is raised. You know, who is the honorable person? Certainly Anna, as she goes through this opera. And actually, Maometto, too, as we'll talk about when you see his reaction to what goes on. So the issue of honor is at stake here. For all of them, they're fighting for their honor, and they all stand by their honor. She even dies for it, of course. This is an opera. But I agree, the storylines can be really slight. It's an excuse, certainly for Rossini, to just let this incredibly, wonderfully melodic music pour out of him. So even though the city is under siege and, fire and horror is going on, the music is very florid often and quite beautiful. So.
And they, of course, have to bring in real cannons.
Absolutely. There's all sorts of weaponry in these opera. I mean, the guns, at the execution of Cavaradossi requires guns.
Right, in Tosca.
Yeah, so let's now play one of these trios. I mentioned that this opera is filled with lovely trios and why the choice of a mezzo-soprano for a singer. And here's a good example where Erizo, who is the tenor, the father, sings with his daughter Anna, the soprano, and Calbo, the mezzo-soprano. You'll hear the beautiful meshing of their voices in this. This is the point at which the men have come to tell Anna that they are leaving to go to the citadel to take a last stand. And she says, please, she begs of them, please take me with you. I don't want to be left to the mercy of the Turks. And her father refuses, Calbo vacillates, and ultimately her father says, well, here is a knife so that if we lose the battle and you are besieged, that you can kill yourself. He's a very odd father, this Erizo.
I should say.
He really sort of vacillates back and forth. He's quick to judge her, he's not so important. Her reaction is what is important. And I probably should say something here, that we are going to have Lea Crocetto sing the role of Anna. And this was a young woman who I heard in San Francisco this last season with an extraordinarily beautiful voice. She won the Met Opera Auditions, I think, in 2010. So it's a real treat to look forward to her. But let's hear a little now of this trio, the first trio we will play today, between the tenor soprano and the mezzo from Maometto.
Thank you.
Once again, an opportunity for virtuosic singing in Maometto by Gioachino Rossini. We're talking to Desiree Mays, author of Opera Unveiled. We're going to take a break and we'll be right back. Please stay tuned. We are back with Desiree Mays, author of Opera Unveiled, talking about Maometto. Now, it's actually Maometto Secondo.
Secondo, yes. That's what the two is, the
yeah,
second.
Yeah, Maometto II. Mm-hmm. Maometto the second. But anyway, we call him Maometto.
Yeah, and sometimes he's called Muhammad, but I think that's confusing. And his real name, the Turkish sultan, was Mehmed.
Mehmed.
In history. So take a choice, but okay. It's Maometto.
Well, we haven't even gotten to the end of Act One yet, so we are about to find out the identity of the mystery man with whom Anna has fallen
in love. I know. Well, the next great high point then is when finally, we're near the end of the first act, Maometto makes his appearance. It's an extraordinary entrance. In this set, they have a sort of a great semicircular wall with which they do absolutely amazing things. At one point, it's lit with candles for the church, and another, it's Anna's bedroom with a niche with her portrait of her mother. And now part of the wall comes down like a drawbridge as Maometto makes this testosterone-filled entrance. It's the only way to describe it. He comes in full of power with his men, and he sings his very first entrance. Victory is not yet fully complete. Lead your companies to assault the citadel. Meanwhile, I will remain here with the troops in the center of the city. By devious paths with our 1,000 bowmen, hotly pursuing the trail of the fleeing foe, we will certainly wreak havoc upon them. So this is the Maometto entrance. And I think the thing to listen for here, again, with these arias, it's not so much the story of what's going on, but the music that's making these arias, the feeling behind it. And then, of course, the singer. In these, this Rossini arias, singers are so important that the voices are right. And this is the great Samuel Ramey at the very peak of his career. He said of this opera, and he sang them all the great bass baritone roles, that this was the hardest to sing. And in Santa Fe, one of the high points of the season will be the fact that we are having Luca Pisarone, who's an internationally famous bass baritone, come and sing our Maometto. But now let's listen to the entrance of Maometto in the opera.
Resultat, sei, o prone.
that was the marvelous entrance of Marmetto. You know, Mary Charlotte, some operas have to be seen. Operas like Aida, for their magnificence, for the grandness of the style and the sets and the costumes. And the music is a part of that giant mosaic. I think this is an opera to see, that yeah. entrance. I mean, you can imagine with a... There are actually portraits of the real Marmetto taking these cities with plunging horses in full battle regalia. And in this production, they're going to dress the Turks, the Muslims, in the actual costumes that they wore of the time in the 1400s, which will make it really, really fascinating, yeah. I think. Some operas are more meditative, or operas you just want to sit and listen to and surrender to the music without having to see the visuals. But I think in this case, the visuals are going to really make all the difference, and it's an opera you should see.
And you also, I would imagine, really want to typecast the characters. Like Marmetto
yes.
has to be, I mean,
mm-hmm.
you talked about the testosterone-filled entrance. Mm-hmm. He has to be that
yeah.
great leader type.
Yes, he does. But he's a complex character. I mean, he's coming in as the victor. He's destroying the city. There's sort of an irony in this particular piece where you think our sympathies should be with the Christian underdogs. They're the one whose city is being destroyed. They're the Christians. But the way this opera progresses, it's brilliantly written. I think it's Marmetto that our sympathies turn to, and you'll see why. Anyway, he makes this amazing entrance, and they have captured Erisso and Calbo. They're brought before him, and he's going to have them tortured and put to death. When Anna runs out of the church where she's been praying to her father's side, and it becomes instantly apparent that her unknown lover, Uberto, was none other than Marmetto himself. So that's
now how he managed this great general, or whatever he is, to have an illicit affair with some girl from the other side.
Well, actually, there's a story. You know, that's all taken care of. That's a little dramatological point they haven't missed. When he first talks with his men, when he's describing Corinth, he there's a little sad sigh with a memory that crosses his mind. And when they ask him about Corinth, he said, "Yes, when I was a younger man, my father, the Sultan, sent me to Negroponto and Corinth, to these islands, to find out how the land lay, to get the road maps. So later on, when they came back to take them," you know, they fill it in quite nicely. It's a little obvious.
Okay.
So he knows, and he has met her, and he was disguised as a student. In Rossini's operas, the great heroes are always disguised as students at some point. Happens in The Barber of Seville. Almaviva is a student. He's really a count. So anyway, he recognizes her and she him, and there's sort of general consternation as they wonder what to do. Marmetto now looks, and he turns to her and he says, "I still love you, and for your sake I will save your father and your brother." She has told him that Calbo is the brother, her brother, so as a way to protect him, whereas as a general he might just have been killed. So the plan is then that Marmetto offers her the throne. He says, "I will make you my queen." And she says, "I can't do that." She says, "I love Duberto, but I hate a liar. I cannot be your queen." So the act ends in the usual consternation that always ends Act One of Rossini's operas, and you go out wondering what's going to happen. In the second act, we are in the magnificent tent of the Sultan, where Anna is enthroned. He has brought her there. She is surrounded by the Muslim women. And the music changes here dramatically from the Rossinian Italian style to a style of the Orient, as the women speak with her and tell her that she should become his queen. She absolutely refuses, and he can't continue the discussion because he has to go fight this battle. And before he leaves, she says, how will I be protected once you leave?" And as a token of his love for her, he gives her his seal of office. He trusts her. He gives it to her and he leaves. The moment he has gone, she takes the seal of office and she gives it to her father, thus enabling the Venetians to conquer the terrible Marmetto. So the final scene then comes to the tomb of a church where Anna is praying and hiding by her mother's grave. Erisso and Calbo are now victorious. They come together. They meet and they sing another wonderful trio. So let's play the trio here, In Questi Estremi Istanti, by Anna, Calbo, and Erisso. Coraggio, the word that works in all languages, right?
Yeah,
have
it's
courage,
true.
Have faith.
This is another beautiful opera.
It is. It's absolutely beautiful. It's very melodic from beginning to end. So in the final scene then, actually the beginning of this last scene, Ariso marries Calbo and Anna together over her mother's tomb. She says, the last thing I want to do you to do for me is that we can be married. They know they will never be able to consummate the marriage because the Turks are now coming for her. They realize that she's betrayed them and they come pouring in. And at the very last moment, Maometto appears, and the woman that he loves, he sees and learns, not only has she betrayed him with the seal of his power, but she is also married to Calbo. He is not her brother, but her husband. And he is absolutely furious. So in the last moments, he sings this marvelous, just 45-second piece. And again, we'll hear from Samuel Raimi as Maometto. So as Maometto watches in those last magnificent moments, Rossini really knows how to wrap up an opera. Anna takes a sword and stabs herself and falls dead on her mother's grave as the rest of the appalled cast and the audience stand by and watch.
So, which you knew was going to happen because Maometto wasn't a tenor.
Absolutely. That's true. I never thought of it that way. But she couldn't win. I mean, she would not become his queen because he was the enemy. And she really put country and father ahead of put duty ahead of her love. But neither one would work out. So in this case, Anna has really no option but to die. But an interesting thing happened with this. This opera had three incarnations, actually. The first was in Naples, and then it went to Venice a year later. And Rossini, for some unreasonable reason, changed the ending so that Anna lived. Doesn't make sense at all.
Now, this is very interesting because there is a scholar whom you write about in your book, Opera Unveiled, who is doing a great deal of scholarship on this opera in particular, and trying to figure out what is the real edition somehow. I mean, what is the real version, if there is such a thing?
That's right. Professor Philip Gossett he's devoted his life to the work of Rossini and restoring these magnificent scores, because over the years, directors took tremendous poetic license, not always poetic, and they'd chop and change. They'd put arias in, take them out, and they were absolutely a travesty of what was originally intended. So with this, I mean, there was a Naples version, then there was in Venice where the opera ended happily, and then when he took it to Paris, this opera became The Siege of Corinth, which is actually quite a different opera. It's the same story, but different in French. And then Professor Gossett now has done the digging. He's gone back. He wants to go back to the original version. So this will be called, and this is how this works, it's called the critical version, which is the latest version of the original that they can find. Some of it they have to really piece together, because as Rossini moved from city to city, they had different singers. And if the singers couldn't handle the arias, they'd take out the hard arias and they'd put in the better arias the singers could sing. So there were all of those factors at the time, which don't apply now. I mean, now once a score is written, it's sealed and that's it. Once there's a score, that's it.
And but you can get all the singers you want.
That's right. That's right. And match them to the roles. But Professor Gossett with the music publisher, German company, and Hans Schelevis have researched this. And this is the new critical version that we will be the first company to present. He said to me that this is sort of like the final version in a sense, because again, it's not until it's up on the stage to see how well the whole thing holds together that they can make those final judgments. So you will not be able to buy a libretto to this opera because they're still in those final moments. But once it's finished with Santa Fe and they make that, that's the libretto that will go out to the rest of the world. And that's the production that people will now see for Maometto.
Oh, that's interesting. So we're making a little bit of history here.
Yep, we're making a little bit of history here. But you won't get a libretto. You have to go to Opera Unveiled to get the story, I suppose, is the only way.
Now, tell us more about the Santa Fe production, what it looks like, who's singing.
The singers are, yes, as I said, we have the great Luca Pisarone is singing our Maometto. David Alden, who is, again, one of the great directors, is our director. He calls this a siege opera, and it'll be very interesting to see how he is working with this piece. The conductor is Frédéric Chazelin, who is the company's resident French conductor,
yeah.
When he's here during the summer months. Lea Crocetto, I mentioned the young singer who won the Metropolitan auditions and whom I heard in San Francisco. Quite an extraordinarily beautiful voice. You need three very strong principles in this. You need the Maometto, of course, the bass, the soprano, and then the calbo, the mezzo-soprano, is sung by an Irish mezzo-soprano. Soprano, Patricia Barden, who's been singing actually Elda in The Ring in New York. So it's a very strong cast. The set is this very beautiful is the word, but it's a very functional. You see it without any lighting. It's a sort of a great curved wall. And lighting is an art form in and of itself. And the way that is lit through these different scenes, so they can take crowd scenes, a church scene, a battle scene, the tomb scene, and it's transformed from this one wall. It's quite magical how this is done. The Santa Fe Opera has this down. I mean, they have a production team that works 2 years in advance on these sets with the designs and what is and is not possible with these various productions. And typically today now, and I think it's a great move, a production is a shared event between two or three opera companies. So rather than spend a vast amount of money for one company to do it, it will go to two or three other companies. That's always a little challenge with our house because we don't have any fly space. There's nothing above the stage. So it's got to be fitted into our stage. So if it's not a shared production, it can be rented out sometimes. That's always interesting with costumes, where you get a prima donna who is Natalie Dessay sized, about 95 pounds, and then the next one might be 195 pounds. So the costumes have very wide seams, so they can be let in and out. But you know, there's all sorts of ways around it, because in this opera is such an expensive art form to produce. So the sharing with other companies or renting out productions is a really good idea.
It's wonderful because then other people have in other places have the opportunity to see something.
That's right. It may not be the case otherwise. Having said that, all of our productions this year are brand new. They've not been seen here before. And that's always very thrilling to come back, to come and see a brand new production.
We're talking to Desiree Mays about Maometto. Now, there are some things that people should know about the Santa Fe Opera. For example, there is an opening night. What is it, a gala?
Great the opening night, actually, yes, the first night is it's a guilds event. All of the guilds of the Santa Fe, there are something like six guilds around the state, Taos, Española, Santa Fe, Albuquerque, that support the opera through the year with various activities. They do wonderful work, and the idea is to support the company. It's to educate audiences, and they do all sorts of different types of events. And on the opening night of the opera, they take over the Florence Dapples Pavilion, where we have our wonderful buffets, and that's their night. But people are not, it's not always generally known that the public are welcome to come to this as well. And you can buy a ticket for the dinner or for the dinner and the opera if you already have your opera tickets. Just call the box office to get tickets for the dinner itself. So that's the opening night. There will be a talk that night as well to tell you about Tosca is the opening night, on as we know. So that's one thing.
Now, there are some events, preview buffets and talks before the opera, as well as the tailgating that many of us do in the parking lot.
Right, right. There's many ways to go to the Santa Fe Opera. First of all, I think you need to forget about being there for the 8:30 or 9 o'clock curtain. You need to plan to be there early. And my feeling with all theater is one should get there ahead of time, leave your own life in the car park or outside the theater, and come in ready for the performance. That's what overtures are about, to settle things down and get you in the right frame of mind. And here at Santa Fe, the ideal thing is to come up and eat first. Otherwise, you have to eat very early downtown, and then you worry about parking and you arrive in a rush. So at Santa Fe, you can come and tailgate. The opening night is such an incredible night. People come in trucks in full evening dress with silverware and cut glass and china. It's absolutely fabulous. I was invited one year to join some friends who had a different wine with all of six courses.
Good heavens.
That was interesting, and the most incredible meal. So you can tailgate, or when you get to the car park, if you don't want to do your own tailgate, you can buy food there.
And just make sure not to get too completely tipsy before the performance,
because you
might fall asleep.
Absolutely, yes. So when you come to the Dapples Pavilion, which is where I speak each night, that's a lovely event. It's an alfresco out-of-doors event, so you see stunning sunsets or amazing thunderstorms up close and very personal. That's exciting. With a lovely meal with wine, and then I come up with dessert and talk about the opera of the day.
Now, those are the preview buffets.
These are the preview buffets, and these need to be booked with your theater tickets. In fact, as soon as you get your tickets, you should buy your preview buffet tickets, because they do sell out. And then another option is to go and hear the prelude talks. These are talks for people who are ticket holders, can go to the theater 2 hours or 1 hour before performance and go to Stearin Hall, which is right by the box office in the theater grounds, and you can hear a talk on the opera by different speakers, sometimes production people, and that's very interesting. So that is held free of charge in Stearin Hall 2 hours or 1 hour before the show if you have a ticket. Otherwise, come and see me at the Cantina. I've got many friends there now. Over the years, we've developed friendships, and it's there's a lot of camaraderie, and it's a fun way to go. But do come early. You can tailgate, you can go to the preview buffet, or you can go to the prelude talks.
We've got just a little bit of time left. Let's hear one more piece from Maometto.
Another trio. That's wonderful. Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
Desiree Mays, thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much, Mary Charlotte.
And I also want to thank Marilyn LeBlanc for engineering today and all of the opera shows. We've been speaking with Desiree Mays. She is an international speaker on opera. She's the author of the book Opera Unveiled, which comes out every year to accompany the Santa Fe Opera season. She gives the preview lectures nightly at the Santa Fe Opera. The opera season opens on Friday, June 29th. For more information on the Santa Fe Opera, you can go to santafeopera.org. You can call 505-986-5900 or 800-280-4654.